From WHQR Public Media, this is The Newsroom. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we'll be unpacking the recent town hall forum we held for the candidates in the 2024 New Hanover County School Board race. As we've been doing for the last few years, we partnered with WECT and Port City Daily on this event, and we'll be joined in just a little bit by PCD's Brenna Flanagan. Now, there are three open seats on the school board this year. Republican Stephanie Crabill and Democrat Hugh McManus have decided not to run again, and Democrat Stephanie Walker is running for county commissioner. That makes it a wide open field with no incumbents, although Democratic candidate Judy Justice, who touts her decades in education, did previously serve on the school board from 2018 to 2022. She's joined by two fellow Democratic candidates, Jerry Jones, a bookstore owner, and Tim Merrick, a retired chiropractor and semi-retired consultant. There's also three Republican candidates who made it through a crowded primary race earlier this year. David Perry, with a background in education and IT and a grandson in the school system. Nikki Bascom, who ran a child care facility and is a former consultant for Smart Start of New Hanover County and a district substitute. And Natasha Tu, formerly a firefighter and the City of Wilmington's Emergency Management Coordinator. Tu was also the founder and is currently the legislation chair for the New Hanover County chapter of Moms for Liberty. These candidates are running for a seat on a board that has been riven by partisan fights in past years, at times to the point of dysfunction, even as staff have pleaded for less politics and focus on more pressing issues. The current board recently fired Superintendent Dr. Charles Faust and need a replacement. They also made deep staffing cuts in the face of a roughly $20 million budget shortfall, and they continue to deal with the learning loss from the pandemic. So whoever wins in November will have their work cut out for them. As you'll hear, our forum had a few components, including questions from our collective newsrooms and those submitted online ahead of the forum and from the audience during the live event. So, to dig into how all that came together and to help us work through what the candidates had to say, I'm joined by my colleague, WHQR's Rachel Keith. Rachel, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So before we get into the forum proper, I want to talk a little bit about how we came up with some of our questions and one of the ways that we found sort of an extra way to get answers from candidates about a whole host of questions. And this was our community agenda.
Yes, for our community agenda for the New Hanover County School Board, we had close to 400 responses. And the top concerns from that was how you would support public schools, how you would treat people of color, people of diverse backgrounds, people of different sexual orientation, how you would address division, how you would address books. So we basically created, from their concerns for the candidates, we created questions based on those topics.
That's right. And this, the community agenda program that our colleague Kelly Kinoyer ran, we did our very best to get survey results that look like New Hanover County. So it might have skewed a little bit liberal, probably skewed a little bit white and a little bit affluent. That's just based on some of the high-level data points we have. But we did try to hear from liberals, conservatives, Republicans, Democrats, unaffiliated, white residents, black residents, Hispanic residents. So it is not a perfect survey, but it does cover a lot of ground. So we wanted to hear from as many people as possible. And we thought that would be a good way to generate questions that are reflective not just of our own concerns as journalists, but what New Hanover County is thinking about the public schools. So a couple of these that I wanted to drill down on a little bit include book banning, indoctrination, low-performing schools, and vouchers. So let's walk through some of the responses we got to these, because some of these questions we didn't get to ask during the forum, so we actually asked through surveys, which you can find online. We'll have links to that on the show page. So let's start with book bans.
This has been a topic in our community for a couple years now. So if you look at the Democratic candidates, Jerry Jones, Judy Justice, flat out no. We have Democrat Tim Merrick saying that of course not, but all should be age appropriate. And then that's what we hear the talking points among David Perry, Natasha Tu, and Nikki Bascom, who are all Republicans. And so they continually say they need to be age appropriate. You have Natasha Tu going as far to say sexually explicit books should not be available. that is what we're hearing from the candidates on book bans.
Okay, so moving on, another issue we heard about from a lot of people is the concern about indoctrination. And here we're talking about primarily concerns that effectively, you know, liberal left-leaning teachers are abusing their position to, you know, not teach kids how to think but what to think.
Yeah, and this again started more or less with Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson. He produced a report in 2021 called Indoctrination in Public Schools. And so we've been hearing about these accusations. We have Democrat Jerry Jones saying no. Judy Justice also says no. And then Tim Merrick says no, absolutely not.
And that's, you know, no, this is not happening.
This is not happening. But from the Republican side, we do have some of these accusations. We have Republican David Perry saying that DEI, critical race theory, which is not being taught in the schools, but, you know, some conservatives say they talked about race, so this is that, or the systemic racism, so they're doing CRT. We have social emotional learning, he even groups in there, is indoctrination, and gender identity. We have Natasha, too, saying that a small minority are a problem. And she said there was an example of an unapproved flag was displayed in an art classroom during this open house, and she was upset by this.
Yeah. So, you know, Natasha, too, saying a small minority of teachers could be attempting to foist their political beliefs on children. I did see, I believe, the flag in question. It was posted on David Perry's, campaign social media page. It does. Whatever you think about the policy, that does appear like the kind of thing that probably would have violated the policy that they recently passed by the school board that would prevent certain things being put up in classrooms. Of course, we'll have links to your reporting on that.
And yes, Nikki Bascom, a Republican, said that she's not personally witnessed this, but she said that, you know, teachers have to leave personal and religious opinions out of classrooms, but that reported concerns should be taken seriously.
All right. Moving on to the issue I think we talked about the most this year, and that is low-performing schools. So these are the schools in New Hanover County's school district that were the furthest down in the statewide rankings.
Yes. So we have some variety here. We have Democrat Jerry Jones saying that more teacher development needs to happen, more support for the parent and caregiver academy, increased counseling potentially that would help those schools. We have Republican David Perry saying we need lower class sizes. And he says less emphasis on vocational training, and those schools need more robust in-school suspension programs. Judy Justice said that they need to start looking at redistricting again to have the schools be more economically and racially diverse instead of them being concentrated. We have Natasha, too, saying that if you just go back to the basics, that will take care of the low-performing schools. And she mentions handwritten work and cursive. We have Democrat Tim Merrick agreeing with David Perry, lower that class size, seek parent involvement, increase pre-K in the district, finding ways to reduce absenteeism and more support for public transportation. And then Nikki Bascom says that we need to take lessons from schools that have improved performance, but she doesn't say necessarily what those are.
All right. So the last issue that we had in these surveys, and you can find in our voter guides, is the topic of vouchers. So this is a program that the state rolled out recently that assigns on a sliding scale based on the family's income a certain amount of money between around $3,000 and around $7,000 to allow parents to take the money that basically is some part of the money that would have gone to their child's public school education and basically get a refund or rebate for that, use that money for a private school, a charter school, or religious school. Proponents of this say it gives families more educational options, and critics note that this is, at the end of the day, taking money out of the general coffers and putting it into private schools instead of public schools.
That's right. And we asked this because voters wanted to know, too. And we have Democrats across the board saying absolutely not. There's no kind of aside or disclaimer. They say no. Dollars should go to public education.
They just do not support the voucher program.
Yes. But then we have David Perry saying that this is not relevant to our school board. And we'll get into later how potentially it is. And there are some tools in their toolbox to tell the legislature how they feel about this. office, but he says, I support a model where the money follows the child. So that would be more in line with the voucher program.
Yeah, absolutely. I've heard it called the backpack model by proponents because the funding goes wherever the student goes.
Right. And then we have Republican Natasha too. She says that she supports school choice, but she said that she'd like to tweak this opportunity scholarship. She's saying that potentially it might leave out kids with disabilities and money for them. And then we have Republican Nikki Bascom. She said, again, this is not my decision, but she is interested in the public school reinvestment fund.
Yeah, and I'm glad Bascom brought that up. It actually shows a level of sort of, you know, policy savvy that I haven't heard from some of the candidates on this particular issue, because one of the lesser discussed parts of this program is that it takes money that would have gone to a school district on behalf of a student and goes to the family instead so they can use it. But it's not the full amount. So it's around $9,000 that would go to a public school district. Families, like I said, get between $3,000 and $7,000. So that leaves a differential. So it's between, you know, $6,000 and $2,000. So where does that extra money go? The state doesn't just write it off and not put it on the budget. They actually put it in a fund, which they will allegedly use for reinvesting in schools around the state. Now, I've heard very few details, in part because I think it's still in the works, about who's in control of that fund, how they decide the best place to put it. Do they have to roll out money every year? Can they keep it for like a rainy day? Or could they, for example, use it in Western North Carolina to repair schools right now? So lots of questions about it. So I'm glad Bascom brought that up.
And then you can also find where they stand on the budget and how that should be handled this year, and then also how they would handle division amongst the members.
In terms of candidates having some pretty tense conversations during school board meetings.
Yes, I'm having some disagreements in a respectful way.
That would be the dream. But I want to move on now to the forum that we held this month. And to do that, I want to bring in Port City Daily's Brenna Flanagan. Brenna, hi.
Hi.
So one of the first questions we asked during this forum has been on the top of people's minds is what would the board candidates like to see in a new superintendent following the firing of Dr. Charles Faust? Rachel, this was an umbrella question for all the candidates. How did they respond?
They all more or less said that they wanted the best person for the job, not necessarily someone that represents a political party. They also said that they wanted to see more transparency. They wanted to see someone who was better with communication. They also said that they wanted to see someone who was visible out in the schools, and that someone who was supportive of staff. We do have Democratic candidate Jerry Jones, and he said this about what he's looking for in that person.
I think that fundamentally I'm looking for someone who is emotionally intelligent. I'm looking for someone who is open to being vulnerable, right? I think one of the things that we see in professional spaces is folks who have an ego about the way they do things and are reticent, right, to receive criticism or to receive direction about the way they do things.
So, Rachel, we had a host of other questions for the candidates, specific questions for each candidate, revolving around the ideas of politics and leadership. And our question for Nikki Bascom had to do with how she feels about the current candidates running for the state superintendent's office. What did she have to say?
Yes, this came from a constituent who wanted to know how she felt about the state superintendent candidate, Michelle Moreau, and they also asked how she would advocate for public schools, and this was her response.
Wow, talk about leaving politics out of it, huh? And honestly, I haven't had a real good chance to look at the policies from Mo Green and Michelle Morrow. I've heard a lot of social media chatter, and I don't think that's a great place for us to get any of our political information. So unfortunately, I haven't done a whole lot of research on the state superintendent. I do plan on doing that, sitting down before Election Day, making sure that I do my research.
So you have here Nikki Bascom. She did obviously run in the primary. She voted in the primary. So that is interesting that she said that she really hasn't done her research yet, but she's going to. And yes, we advocate in the media that you do follow legitimate news sources to understand who these candidates are.
Yeah, and I'll say Nikki Bascom also did pose for a photo with Michelle Moreau at an event. And also, for what it's worth, candidate Natasha Tu, another Republican candidate, has been very vocal on social media about her support for Moreau. And I think they've actually endorsed each other. So it's certainly possible. It's not this overwhelming task to learn about who's running for the top education office in the state. All right, moving on, Brenda, we had a question for Democratic candidate Tim Merrick. This came from the audience. What was this about?
Yes, so an audience member had asked him about his past comments made about his fellow candidates. He basically said some of them were extremist. And so this is what he had to say in regards to those.
I was saying before that it seems to me our Republican opponents want to take us back 50 years, but we just heard it, folks. It's 100. Some of my, all the Republican opponents that I know of have signed on to the Moms for Liberty pledge. Moms for Liberty is described as an anti-government hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. It's about destroying, it's about, you know, restricting what teachers can teach. It's about bringing Christian nationalism to school. I love prayer, and I love everyone to be able to have prayer, but not just one prayer.
So you might have heard in the background of that question, we actually had to pause due to heckling from audience members, including current school board member Pat Bradford. But when he continued, he said that both Natasha Tu, David Perry, and Nikki Bascom had signed the Moms for Liberty pledge. That is not completely true. Yes, both Natasha and David Perry have signed it. Natasha Tu is actually the legislation chair for the New Hanover County chapter of Moms for Liberty, but Nikki Bascom has not signed the pledge. The pledge calls for signers to advocate and advance policies that increase parental involvement in educational decision-making. Merrick is right in saying Moms for Liberty is considered a far-right extremist group by the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is a civil rights watchdog organization.
Yeah, and I mean, we visibly saw Nikki shaking her head when he was making that statement. So, Ben, you reached out to Jan Boswell, the chair of that group, and said, yeah, she did not sign it.
Yeah, that's right. And I just want to add real quick that Tim Merrick has been very critical of Natasha, too. And he's been substantiated on a number of those points, some of which we'll get into later on the show. But he's not always accurate. He, for example, claimed on social media that Tu had been fired from the city of Wilmington for her behavior at school board call to the audience sessions. That's not true. Tu resigned. Although, to Merrick's credit, when I pointed this out, he corrected himself. All right, moving on. We had a question for Democratic candidate Judy Justice about some of her behavior when she previously served on the board and when she was actually censured by her board members. And here was her response to that question.
In fact, I've worked with the current chairman, and he and I actually usually would agree more than we disagree. And we're of different political parties. But one of the reasons we did agree was because we both have a long history of 30 years working together off and on educationally, and we both trusted each other and knew that we were focusing on the kids. And so we did agree on very helpful things for the students. One of the problems I found with the past board, and I hope it doesn't happen with this board, is that people are on there not necessarily for the kids, but for their own personal agendas. You've got to set that aside.
Yeah, so Justice does address her censure sort of head on, as she's done in the past. She was censured in 2022 based on accusations that she revealed confidential information about a district employee. Justice denied this at the time and that she broke any state law, but she did not argue against the accusations that she went against policy. But she said her action was unintentional.
She started that response with, hey, they are not going to silence me. And I was the one speaking out against the teachers who were found in a court of law to be sexually abusing students. And so she kind of took a left turn to say, this is, you know, why I was censured. But then you have the background of, you know, what the other board members said about that. And that was a 5-2 vote. It was just her and Stephanie mm-hmm. Walker who voted against that censure.
So early on in the forum, we had another question for Judy Justice. Rachel, this one was about the climate survey that was recently conducted.
This came from an audience member about her claims of failed leadership. So the question was, who are you talking about with this failed leadership? And she brought up the climate survey results from 2024.
What they were paying attention to was, you know, spending hours on whether or not they should ban books, writing policy that made no sense whatsoever educationally. I'm an educator. I've had over 30 years of experience with educators. I work with the educators in this county. They come to me, they talk to me, and they want to be listened to, and they know what they're talking about. They know how to educate children. Nobody's indoctrinating children. If they could indoctrinate children, they'd indoctrinate them to listen and be quiet in class and learn. This is some of the crazy things that the leadership currently is doing is what I'm complaining about.
And she said earlier that she wished that Dr. Faust could have had more support from the board. But a lot of times over when she was in power from 2018 to 2022, when Faust toward the end of that tenure, I mean, it was pretty contentious. They would fight openly on the dais at times and have disagreements openly. So, you know, she might have had a good working relationship with some, but others, it was tenuous.
All right. Well, we've got to take a quick break. We'll be back with more with Port City Daily's Brenna Flanagan and WHQR's Rachel Keith. We'll be talking about books, curriculum, critical thinking, and misinformation. You're listening to The Newsroom. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Newsroom. I'm Ben Shockman. Thanks for staying with us. I'm here with Port City Daily's Brenna Flanagan and WHQR's Rachel Keith, and we're talking about our recent Board of Education Candidates Forum. Now, Rachel, we had another question for Nikki Bascom. What was this one all about?
Yes, this was one of the reporter questions, so I wrote this question. What we had heard is that at a GOP town forum that board member Stephanie Craybill was in attendance, that Nikki gave an entire presentation on the Battle of the Books competition and how it was deficient and it was problematic, and basically pointing out the reasons why. And some advocates in the community wanted to know her stance on books and how she would treat books, because books have been under the microscope for 2 years, especially with the banning of stamped racism, anti-racism, and you in the classroom, not necessarily the library, but in the classroom. There was a proposal for a book committee that died down, and there's just so many people want to know where people stand on books. And she said unequivocally she's not for banning books, but she, you know, was reluctant to answer a question about Battle of the Books.
Well, here we go again.
It's a legitimate question.
Oh, I know it's a legitimate question. Battle of the Books is not something that comes from our school district, and I think that is something that parents need to be aware of. I think the biggest concern with Battle of the Books was not necessarily all of the books, but parents thought that because they elected these conservative school board members, that every book in the Battle of the Books was chosen by those school board members. And I think there needs to be a little bit more clarity that these books are not from our school district. They are from the Library Association.
And we do have a whole site from New Hanover County Schools dedicated to this competition. And it does link to the book list. It talks about how these books are selected. It talks about how you don't have to read all of the books on the list. And again, this is a totally voluntary opt-in program. Also, this is in response to an opinion piece that board member Josie Barnhart wrote about how this competition was problematic. And so Mary Alice Hudson is the lead media specialist. And after this op-ed was written, she had to come and give a presentation at an agenda review meeting. And she talked to the board members about how this worked and how a lot of students really like this program and teachers. And actually, at the June public call, we had close to 10 people coming in out in support of this competition. And 7 of those were students, middle and high school students, saying how wonderful the program was and how they wanted to keep it, and that it's student choice, it's parent choice. And again, you know, Nikki's issue was she wanted the public to know that some of these books would be in the library. But again, parents have control, can put controls on their students in the library on what they can and can't check out. This is a voluntary opt-in, and, you know, parents do know what they are reading.
All right, moving on. Brenna, you had a fairly direct question for Republican candidate Natasha too about misinformation she spread during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yes, so Natasha spread a baseless rumor, essentially, that athletes were dropping dead on the field after getting the coronavirus vaccine. And here's what she had to say.
I'm glad you asked that. I've been waiting for someone to ask me that. I think I've been proven right with the recent studies that have come out. The COVID vaccine has killed more people than COVID did. flat out. Yeah, go do your research.
Correct.
I'm not saying something that's not untrue. It's just something that other people are not willing to understand, research, or accept. That's not my problem. It is a bioweapon. It has killed more people than it has helped.
So you hear me say on that clip, that's not correct. And, you know, there's a lot here to unpack. But first of all, what she's saying has been debunked by numerous sources, including the CDC and the NIH. Per 2022 reporting from the Washington Post, the story of hundreds of athletes dropping dead from coronavirus vaccines has its roots in mysterious Austrian websites with ties to that country's far-right populist party, the Freedom Party. It seems to begin with after a Danish soccer player collapsed during Euro 2020. Rumors swirled it was because of the vaccine, though his club said he had not been vaccinated at that point. There have been reports of increased inflammation of the heart lining after taking the mRNA-based vaccines, but reputed medical research shows the risk of getting myocarditis from the coronavirus itself is about 100 times higher than getting it from a vaccine. Still, there have been many fact checks on this claim, and despite Tu saying that she wanted to bring back critical thinking skills to New Hanover County schools later in the forum, she said she stands by her claim. After she said this, I asked Tu to basically cite her sources, and she couldn't. Though she did say she had 2 3-ring binders full of studies, she has not shared those with me as of yet.
They're propagandists, and they're absolutely false. They're in bed with big pharma, big government, like everybody else. Yes, ma'am, I firmly believe that. Call me conspiracy theorist. Go ahead and have another shot, and you guys will probably drop dead in the next 2 years. Those shots are killing people. They're causing turbo cancers. They're making health issues exacerbated. Then never would laugh. I really hope it doesn't happen to anyone in this audience, but that is what is happening.
So I did once again ask to cite her sources for the second time. She still didn't have any that she could give me. But Tu did get a lot of applause from the audience after this, including from current board member Pat Bradford.
Yeah, I mean, the COVID vaccine issue came up she's brought that up several times, and one in particular was in 2022, and that was the same meeting where she got escorted out mm-hmm. by law enforcement, and she's been escorted out twice. And we wanted to ask, you know, if she was going to double down on this incorrect information for the public, and she did. And other issues with Tu are that her campaign manager was arrested on charges related to January 6th. Justina Gardino was again arraigned for entering the Capitol on January 6th. When we had the issues surrounding the potential closure of the Career Readiness Academy at Mosley, she went on Steve Bannon's podcast and basically drummed up support that illegal refugees were that those are basically her words, were coming in to flood New Hanover County schools. And shortly after that, Dr. Faust, the former superintendent, got a call saying that someone wanted to see him hanged from Arizona. She is also at that same 2022 meeting. She said for all these reasons, that's why she pulled her student out of this hellhole district. And it's our understanding that Natasha's student is back in the district currently. But she's had, you know, this is her history.
Right. And, you know, just recently, Natasha Tu reposted on social media something from Marjorie Taylor Greene suggesting that the Democratic Party could control the weather, directing Hurricane Helene towards largely conservative parts of western North Carolina. Again, an absurd and hurtful thing to put, even by the very low standards of social media.
And there's been another clip that's been going around from the NAACP forum, and they asked how she would protect LGBTQIA+ students and their families. And she started off saying that she respects everybody and everybody, you know, has a right to their rights, essentially. But then she said that the school system is not supposed to honor if her child wanted to be a pirate and chop their leg off and stab their eye out, that the school district wouldn't have to accommodate. And that was her response to how you would protect that community.
Right. That was her disparaging analogy for a trans student. And Natasha Tui said in her responses to our questionnaire that trans students don't exist.
And which, gender identity is a cult.
Right. And so I know that it sounds like we are piling on to as a candidate, but we have received probably the most questions from the general public about her campaign, and not just from progressive liberals, but also from some moderate Republicans who are concerned at the style of her rhetoric.
And I will say, we had to ask Judy about her censure. We had to ask Nikki about where she stood on books and where she stood on the state superintendent's race. We had to ask Jerry that he made the choice, Jerry Jones, to send his students to outside of the public school system. He had an answer for that and was non-defensive in his answer. And Tim Merrick has ideas about how to do suspension differently. I mean, we had to go into where these candidates are and see how they would hold up their rationale for their points of view, because the public deserves to know those.
All right, well, we've got to take a quick break. We'll have more from Port City Daily's Brenna Flanagan and WHQR's Rachel Keith in just a moment. We'll be getting into the issues of student behavior and funding. You're listening to The Newsroom. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Newsroom. I'm Ben Shockman. Thanks for staying with us. I'm here with Port City Daily's Brenna Flanagan and WHQR's Rachel Keith, and we're talking about our forum for candidates for the New Hanover County Board of Education. Now, Rachel, we had a question for Republican candidate David Perry about school finances.
Yes, financing is on top of mind for a lot of voters and people who work in the district, because this year we in the media reported very heavily on the $20 million shortfall that the school district experienced. And it's a nuanced answer, but $10 million of that, if you want to succinctly say it, was from the loss of federal COVID relief funding. And $10 million going into that other $10 million is that salaries were going up. There was a state mandated raise, and there were mandated percent increases for benefits and retirement. And guess what? If the state does not provide for that position, the local has to pick that up. So that was a huge chunk of a lot of that money had to go to those mandated increases. Also, they had to dip into their fund balance over the years to cover things that were unforeseen. And they also had to drain it down to give that local teacher supplement. So it was a confluence of a lot of different variables, but here we are. They had to cut around 279 positions. So a lot in the community were saying, what in the world, you know, how did we get to this place? So there is this added emphasis on the budget. And so we have David Perry here talking about how he wanted a detailed audit of the finances.
I think there are too many things that are hidden in the cracks. What we see is the big board, the high level items. And then you've got all the things that are snuck in here. And what is presented to, I think, the board and to the public is just those high level numbers. We don't know all the money we are spending on, say, technology. How much money are we spending on all these various, subscriptions to all the software that we're using to buy, like trying to buy laptops and tablets for every single student in New Hanover County?
And so, contextual information here, the district has an internal auditor. Her name is Nancy Braswell. So there are some reporting functions that she has to do for the district's finances. In January, there was a 113-page external audit that was presented to the board, and that was done by a third party, and I asked how much the district spends on that, and that contract is $69,000. So we have to ask the question of David Perry, does he want another contract? Does he want to do the analysis himself? There are public records, and that is for everyone who is listening. They can ask for contracts that the school system does have with software companies. So any type of financial information, that is all public information. I think what David Perry is asking is a lot of times people want to see the line-by-line budget analysis, and there is not a public-facing document for that, but there is plenty financial information out there, but potentially it's not the one he's looking for. And again, this audit was a huge presentation in January about the district's finances.
All right, Brenna, we had another financial question, this time for Democratic candidate Jerry Jones.
Yes, this one was submitted by a Port City Daily reader. It basically asked, do you feel our district receives enough funding to meet the needs of our students? And here's what he had to say.
We understand that the application of resources is one of the things that we can use to move that particular mountain. We can look at the data that's being provided by the district and see that we have pockets of students all over the district who simply are not performing as well as some of their peers. And a lot of that really is down to funding and the ability to apply resources in such a way as to leverage the abilities that our teachers bring to the classroom in to bring about that kind of educational attainment that we would need. I don't believe that we're receiving enough funding to meet those goals.
So Jones didn't give any specific numbers on how much more funding he would like to see compared to what the district is receiving now. But he is speaking to the district's low-performing schools. The state reviews test scores and other metrics annually, and schools that have earned a D or F and have not exceeded growth expectations are considered low-performing. This year, New Hanover County Schools had 6, which was down 1 from last year and cut in half since the pandemic. Williston and Snipes Academy actually moved out of this low-performing status this year. The other schools that remain low-performing are Rachel Freeman, College Park, Forest Hills Global Elementary, the Career Readiness Academy at Mosley, and Wrightsboro Elementary. These schools do have the highest populations of students of color and students with a lower socioeconomic status. And a lot of that concentration is due to how New Hanover County Schools is districted. It adopted a neighborhood schools model, meaning students would attend the school closest to them, even though Wilmington's housing has been divided historically by race and class due to segregated housing practices. Jones is arguing more resources are needed to bring these low-performing schools into passing territory. New Hanover County Schools does receive extra funding for its schools with high percentages of students from low-income families through the federal Title IX. New Hanover County Schools has begun a turnaround task force to address ways to improve learning at these low-performing schools, and it's also leveraged funds from the New Hanover Community Endowment, which is funding a 3-year pilot of the full-service community school model at Rachel Freeman. But as far as governmental funding, it remains tight. Commissioners did step up their funding this year, but many in the district have claimed the state, which makes up the bulk of student school districts' funding, needs to step up its allocations. And that's where school board members can come in to advocate.
All right, Rachel, we had a question for Democratic candidate Tim Merrick. Another question where equity was at issue, this time about suspensions.
Yes, this is one of his platform components to talk about the suspension issue. And this is what he said when we asked him to explain this.
Well, first of all, there's always going to be certain cases where suspension is absolutely warranted, right? We need to maintain the safety of our students and our teachers. However, zero tolerance exclusionary practices have been shown to be ineffective, and they reduce the amount of education of those children who are suspended. They also disproportionately affect people of color and LGBTQ kids. A recent University of Chicago study showed that when we use restorative justice rather than exclusionary principles, 35% less arrests in school and even 15% less arrests out of school and 18% less suspensions out of school.
And so I asked Tim Merrick to send me this study, and he did, and it was highlighted in an article in NEA. And so people can go and see for themselves. And what he's talking about is this restorative justice, and it's basically restoring the harm that you did instead of just saying, you know what, you're out and you have 10 days and we're just going to forget about it when you come back. So it's thinking outside the box about how they can, you know, say they're sorry or perform works that would show that they're trying to restore, they're trying to make up for the damage that they did. And it depends on what the infraction is. And again, like he said, there are kind of zero tolerance policies for assaults and drugs and alcohol and things of that and guns. guns on campus. But for other infractions, could we do something different to get these kids out of school where potentially they do not have adult supervision? And we do know from our reporting in the district that they were on sanction from the federal government for disproportionately suspending students of color with disability. They have come off that list, but there's still work to be done. And they had to be strategic about how they would fix that. And it looks like they've been making some changes.
Yeah, one thing I can say is that a candidate 2 years ago, Veronica McLaren Brown, and the Love Our Children movement had been asking for effectively ending all suspensions for young students. And what we've heard from some teachers is that while they in principle supported that, there were often situations where there was nothing else to do with a student because they didn't have the in-class support or the mental health capacity in the school to basically remove the kid from a situation where they were disrupting other students or going through crisis themselves and deal with the issue. So teachers were sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place.
And Merrick did say in solving this issue is hiring more staff. And so you need behavior specialists, you need more counselors and social workers to keep the kids in school instead of saying we don't have the staff to deal with this right now.
Moving on, Brenna, we had a question for Republican candidate David Perry talking about his views on, well, let's just say it, a good guy with a gun.
Yes. So David Perry has said in the past that he would like teachers to be armed. And here's what he had to say at the forum regarding these past statements.
I did say that at the during a primary forum. I actually regret saying it, not because I don't believe in it. I believe that armed teachers would be a great idea if they were well trained and went through advanced training, not just everybody with a and not required of teachers. I do think this is a good idea, but I'm sorry for bringing it up because it's something that we're not going to get a vote on as a school board. This is something that is an issue for the General Assembly. And so when we start hearing stuff about private school vouchers and, you know, Leandro, that my Democratic opponents keep bringing up, those have nothing to do with what we can do as a school board. So we need to concentrate on the things that we can actually do.
So Perry is right when he says this is an issue that would have to be taken up by the North Carolina General Assembly, which has not indicated it will. And I did ask Perry in a follow-up about school resource officers, which he said he would like to see more of in schools. I asked if he had a number in mind for those SROs. Right now there's at least one in each school, but Perry did not have an answer for that. But I want to talk about the broader point Perry is making. There are a lot of issues affecting New Hanover County schools and local school districts that they don't have control over. He specifically mentions private school vouchers, which were created to essentially cover the financial gap between lower income families and private school tuition. However, the General Assembly voted last year to expand the vouchers to all families, those with higher incomes receiving less of the supplement, but assistance nonetheless. He also mentions Leandro, which is a case that has worked its way through the North Carolina courts and calls for the General Assembly to provide more funding to school districts. The Assembly's Republican leadership continues to resist this. And there are a host of other issues. We have the Parents' Bill of Rights, calendar law, the school funding model as a whole that the state imposes on local districts. However, it is part of the job to advocate for improvements at the state level.
Yeah, and I mean, he's right that they're not voting on it, but those policies affect them, and school boards do resolutions. For example, Bladen County Schools has passed a resolution to stop the voucher funding. In the past, the CFO, Ashley Sutton, has asked the school board to support a resolution to not cost share with charter schools. Mm-hmm. But that did pass 4-3. And you have Melissa Mason, Pat Bradford, and Josie Barnhart supporting that mm-hmm. they share. So there are things that they can do. And sometimes school boards openly defy General Assembly law. Just take the calendar law, for example. There are yep. about 25 school districts that are openly defying that. So it's somewhat of a more nuanced answer that they have no control over, you know, they can't do anything about these issues.
Absolutely. And I would say in general with local officials, there are many things that are out of their hands that goes for our county commissioners and our district attorney as well. But the bully pulpit is part of holding elected office. Certainly the county commissioners do not have the money in their coffers to build a new Cape Fear Memorial Bridge, but that did not stop them from passing resolutions asking for the state and the federal government to step in and help them do that. So when you get elected to local office, just because it's not in your jurisdiction doesn't mean it shouldn't be on your desk.
And a lot of times the General Assembly will say, we heard this from our constituents back home. We heard this from our governments back home that they don't want this or they do want this. So it is part of the calculus.
All right. Well, that wraps up our review of some of the things that the candidates had to say during our forum. But certainly that was not everything that happened. And I, again, encourage you to take 50 minutes and watch the whole video, which we'll have links to online. But before we go, Rachel, I know that you wanted to say a little something about why we put this forum together, why we did it the way we did it, and what you think the role of this is for the voting public.
Yes, so we tried to provide some balance. The candidates each got a closing and an opening statement that they could say what they wanted to say about the issues that they think are important. And we did have an umbrella question that they all answered about who they would pick for the superintendent. And we had two sections of audience questions. You know, the reporters cannot control those. We pick those at random, and those are what they wanted to hear. And the reporter questions, yes, it was something that people were saying, hey, can you ask them this? This is really important. So we decided to say, okay, people want to know the answer to this question, and it might be difficult for them to answer, and it might be awkward, but it is a question nonetheless. And that's our role as journalists, is we're supposed to ask tough questions. We're not necessarily there to be their campaign managers and give them softball questions. There was time for them to say their piece without us questioning them, but that is our role in the media. We are supposed to be independent. We're supposed to be asking the questions that people don't want to ask. And we had to ask also where the school board has been over the past 2 years. And a lot of those have been culture war issues about books, about professional standards of conduct, about what teachers can have in their classroom. We have the climate results from May 2024 that brought up a lot of concerns about leadership. So we can't shy away from those issues, even though they might not want to speak on them.
And at the end of the forum, we did have current board member Josie Barnhart come up and express her frustration and her disappointment with the forum. She suggested that it would have been much better if it had focused on policy instead of some of the partisan political character issues. And we heard that critique from other people as well on the left and the right, where they would prefer that we don't, in the words of one person who emailed me, not amplify the culture war rhetoric and focus really drilling down on policy. And I think, you know, to a certain extent, I agree with that. I think a long, boring 4-hour forum where we really get into the nuts and bolts of every policy would have been better. But we serve a number of roles. One is to cover the weedy nuts and bolts of policy. But also, we are the public's way of getting answers out of people who are running for really important offices. And it feels inappropriate for us to tell the public, no, we won't ask that question because we don't think it's important. Because people do vote for policy and they do vote for the person. They do vote for the person's character and their morals and their philosophy. So we had to kind of strike a balance. And if you felt that balance was out of whack, we'd love to hear from you because we're constantly refining these forums and trying to make them better. But at the end of the day, what we want to do is give the voters the best portrait of the people who are on the ballot that we possibly can. And that includes the policy and the persona. So that's all I can say about that.
Yeah, and I will say we did ask about the grading policy, the 50% grading policy in the first quarter. And we got an answer from one of the candidates on that. We did ask about the classroom display policy. Yes, and there are things that we couldn't get to and that we would have liked to. And, you know, maybe in the future we can do more of these. But this is what we had with the time that we had, and we tried to, again, go based off what the audience gave us as well.
And I will say, this is also all done live with a relatively small team of journalists who do this above and beyond their regular day job. So thank you guys for that. Rachel, closing thoughts here.
Yeah, I would just say, you know, it's important when we're trying to figure out who our political leaders are going to be. How will they handle tough questions? Will they balk at it? Will they say, oh, thank you for that question. Here's my point of view on it. And so you have to see when stuff gets hard, how are people going to handle that situation?
Yeah, and I will say, all of the candidates from this forum came up to us after and shook our hands and appreciated the questions despite some of the tense moments.
Yeah, we did. I made sure of that as well, Brenna, and that's really important. We're all here to do a job, and we're all on different sides of the coin, but we're all here for the democratic process.
Yeah, 6 very different people showed up, took the time and energy to prepare some answers for our questions and took it in stride. And so we thank them.
We thank you.
And I thank you, WHKR's Rachel Keith and Port City Daily's Brenna Flanagan. Thank you guys for being here.
Thank you.
All right. That's all the time we have for this episode of The Newsroom. Thanks to my colleague Rachel Keith and Brenna Flanagan from Port City Daily. Also thanks to Ava Brengord, who couldn't make it for today's show but helped us organize the forum and ask questions of the candidates. Thanks to WECT anchor John Evans for emceeing the event and all the staff from WECT, Port City Daily, and WHQR who helped put on this event, and to Cape Fear Community College for once again providing us with a great space to host it. Thanks, of course, goes to the candidates as well for taking the time to attend our event. And last but not least, thanks to WHQR's Ken Campbell, as always, for technical support. If you missed any part of this program, you can find it at whqr.org or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have comments, concerns, or an idea for a future show, email us at newsroom@whqr.org. Just a reminder, early one-stop voting starts on Thursday, October 17th, and Election Day is Tuesday, November 5th. You can find plenty of voter information on our show page and at whqr.org. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us for the next edition of The Newsroom.